So we're reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 14, text number 43 and 44. Is that what we have on the board? Yes. Okay. So I'll read 43 and then we will chant 44 together. Okay. Translation. Thus rebuked by his mother, the Lord will go in anger to a room and break all the pots within. Okay, text number 44. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Then Sachimata will take her son on her lap and pacify him. And the Lord will be very much ashamed, admitting his own faults. Purport. There is a nice description of the faults of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his childhood in the Chaitanya Bhagavat Adi Lila chapter 3, where it is said that the child Lord used to steal all kinds of eatables from the houses of neighboring friends. In some houses he would steal milk and drink it, and in others he would steal and eat prepared rice. Sometimes he would break cooking pots. If there were nothing to eat, but there were small babies, the Lord would tease the babies and make them cry. Sometimes a neighbor would complain to Sachimata, "My child is very small, but your child puts water in the ears of my child, making the child cry." Okay. Magyana tamarandasya, gyananjana shalakaya, chakshuru militam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakatam Mayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutapadakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatham Vitam Twamsijivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishabhanu Suta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanche kaupatrubhyascha kripa sindubhyevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Then Sachimada will take her son on her lap and pacify him, and the Lord will be very much ashamed, admitting his own faults. The Lord will be very much ashamed, admitting his own faults. So we're dealing with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is faultless. He has no faults. And at the same time here, we see the wonderful exchanges that take place. And on the one level, he is doing something wrong. I mean, imagine you have a child and someone else's child is pulling water in your child's ears. Right? They're doing something wrong. At the same time, there is this existential difference between the Lord and the living entity. And therefore, there are certain things that we can do, but there is no limit to what the Lord can do. The difference is in the effect. Right? The difference is in the effect. And therefore, actually, there are categories of living entities. There are the normal conditioned living entities. There is the Lord, the category of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu Tattva. And then there are exalted devotees. Based upon the category, different things are allowed. Jiva Tattva, anything goes. Then you have exalted personalities such as Shiva. Certain things can be done, certain things cannot be done. Then you have the living entities, the conditioned living entities. Very limited scope for activity. Right? Prabhupada gives the example of Lord Shiva taking in the poison, right, from the ocean. And therefore he has a name, Nilakant. Right? Prabhupada says you can't imitate that activity. Based upon the person's qualification, therefore there are certain things that they are able to do, certain things that they should not do. Interestingly enough, whatever the Lord does has auspicious effect. Anything he does is auspicious. He puts water in the child's ears, it's auspicious. That child's lucky. Right? Doesn't matter that you have an earache. It was Krishna who put the water in your ears. You're lucky. Okay? Anything he does. Killing living entities, right? Shishupal. Okay, he can insult me as much as he likes, but on the 100th occasion, I'm going to kill this person. Right? Immediately, this living entity is liberated. The special quality is the effect. He can do anything. Anything he does, auspicious effect. But for the conditioned living entity, it's not the same. Therefore, limited activities. So for the conditioned living entities, you do these sets of activities, it will generate an auspicious result. You do anything outside of that, you're going to suffer. So that brings us to an underlying existential point, that activity is a function of adhikar. Right? What you can do and what you can't do is actually a function of your qualification. Right? And the more qualified someone is, interestingly enough, the greater the scope of their activities. That means that the more qualified the living entity is, the more freedom they actually have. So the process of Krishna consciousness is automatically the process of liberation. In other words, liberation becomes the side effect of Krishna consciousness. So our process is very different to how it is viewed by the materialistic consciousness. We have restriction. Right? There's certain things we do, certain things we don't do. But to the conditioned living entity in material consciousness, they consider the restrictions of religion to be like a prison. But we consider the restrictions of religion to be like a ladder. So, two types of restriction. When you're restricted by the prison, you're trapped, actually. Right? There's certain things you can't do. You are actually held within a confined space. But the restriction of the ladder is very different. The restriction of the ladder means that you have to follow a certain structure, but the more you follow the structure, the more elevated you become. The more you follow the structure, the more you are able to reach certain conditions or certain situations that you otherwise have absolutely no access to. So that's the difference. Therefore, Prabhupada calls it the four principles, regulative principles of what? Of freedom. Because by following those things, you actually become liberated. Now, the converse is also true. By materialistic life, you actually become restricted. Right? So that's the illusion. The illusion is of the materialistic mind is that I can do anything I want. Yet, the more you do anything you want, the less freedom you actually have. And that lack of freedom, it's subtle. The lack of freedom of the materialistic life is called compulsion. Because what happens is when you engage in materialistic activities, there's a reaction in the outside world, but there's also a reaction that takes place within you. Right? So have you ever found that there's certain habits that you have that you just cannot give up? Yes or no? Yeah, that is a subtle reaction. When you do the wrong thing, not only do you get a reaction in the external world, but you become compelled to that habit of doing the wrong thing. That is a subtle reaction that takes place on the level of the mind. Two types of reaction. Therefore, in Krishna consciousness, you become liberated by both by following properly. You become liberated by both, or from both, to the extent that you follow this process properly. In the beginning stages, you follow the process externally. But in the advanced stages, you're meant to follow the process both externally and internally. And if you don't do both, you will end up following the process actual. Rather, you'll end up being unable to follow the process even in the external world. So the march in Krishna consciousness is actually ultimately an inner journey. Right? The march in Krishna consciousness is ultimately an internal journey. And the more you go deep, the more that you're able to inculcate Krishna consciousness into the outside world in a meaningful and lasting way. As deep as you are internally, to that extent you can inculcate Krishna consciousness into the hearts and minds of others in the external world. So it is ultimately an internal cultivation. Otherwise, what happens is you will have the ability to have the facility of Krishna consciousness, but without the potency of Krishna consciousness. Right? There's a difference between having a preaching project which has the facility of preaching and having a preaching project where people actually become devotees. You understand? You can have a big program, thousands of people come, but no one took to Krishna consciousness. Someone else has a small program, all of them take to Krishna consciousness. And not only take to Krishna consciousness, they take it on with depth. Right? The external facility doesn't make the program. The heart of the program is the devotional consciousness. It is the bhakti shakti. Right? Wherever that potency is present, Krishna consciousness is actually happening. Right? So we have different levels of devotees. And based upon the different levels, they can see different things. So we have this idea of Prakriti Bhakta. Right? Prabhupada says in one statement, they are on the threshold of devotion. Interesting term, right? Because the word Prakriti means what? Material. Right? And so sometimes Prabhupada translates this term Prakriti Bhakta, materialistic devotee, which is almost like a contradiction in terms. Because by definition, a devotee is not materialistic. You understand the point? What that means is like this. Imagine that you're in a particular country, but you're standing on the border. You're in a particular country, but you're standing on the border. Right? You're between America and Mexico, okay? Okay, just to keep it topical, right? Right? Let's say you're on the wall, right? They made some investment, okay? Of course, Mexico paid, right? But you're on the wall. You're standing between Mexico and the US. Now, you may argue that you're in Mexico. Someone else may argue you're in the US. Technically, you're straddled between both worlds. Now, the special quality you have, though, is that even though you're straddled between the both worlds, even though you're in the border between Mexico and America, what determines your situation is your aspiration. You may be on the border between Mexico and America, but your vision is very clearly focused on America. You understand? You are between countries. But because you're looking at America, because you're learning about America, because you're thinking about America, because your determination is to cross the border into America, technically speaking, you're considered American. You're American by endeavor. but you may not be fully in that particular country at this particular moment in time. You understand the point? So in the same way, if we're on the border between the material and the spiritual, but our aspiration is devotional, then the more liberal definition of bhakti counts. That person's a devotee, right? You're considered in the country, right? You've made it through. If, however, you start to identify with the place that you came from, you understand the point? Then what happens is it's first a misidentification. You start thinking back to Mexico. You start thinking about the culture, the music, the food, everything. By that meditation, by that attachment, you are going to go back. So this is Prakriti Bhakta. Then you have the Madhyam Bhakta. Right? They're in that particular country. But they're still being acculturated to the norms of that particular country. Okay, they've got their legal citizenship. Right? So they are meant to be there. Right? But they are new to the country, new to the culture. They are becoming acclimatized. But there are some people who were there since the country was established. That's your Nitya Siddha. Right? That's your eternal resident. So, we want to consider where we are and consider the freedom that comes the more we become acculturated to the norms of the spiritual world. And that is the meaning of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness means to become acculturated to the eternal norms of the soul. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to become acculturated to the norms of the soul. And everything, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, every thought that comes out of the mind of man is opposed to the philosophy of the Bhagavad. Interesting. Every thought that comes out of the mind of man. So we are in a difficult situation because we're straddled between these two cultures. Material culture, spiritual culture. By association, we can move forward. And there's a subtle point that comes up here. It says, Sachimad will take her son on her lap and pacify him, and the Lord will be very much ashamed admitting his own faults. If one is able to admit their fallen condition, that's a very exalted position. Right? In a world where everyone thinks that they're great and that they're special, if you don't think that you're special, that's special. Right? Because that's unusual, that's unique. And the idea that you're supreme, that you're great, you're the best, all of these things are exceedingly common. Because in the material world, everyone is playing God. That's normal. Right? Everyone is trying to play God. So for someone to move out of that situation and to take the position of the devotee, that's unique. That's incredibly special. And thus you stand out from the crowd and you gain the attention of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The moment you move out of the rat race, you gain the attention of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We're not trying to become bigger, we're trying to become smaller. That's our direction. We're trying to reverse the entire process of creation by engaging ourselves with the spiritual energy. And as we do so, a subtle deconstruction is actually happening. You are separating yourself and your identity from all of the gross material elements, and then from the subtle elements, and all that's left is your identity as what? Soul. Jivaras Rupoy Krishna Nitya Das. So the process of Krishna consciousness is deconstructing the material creation within consciousness, because it is disidentifying from everything. Not this, not that, not the body, not the mind, not the intelligence, not even the ahankara, not the false ego. Simply, Gopi Bhattu Pada Kamalayo Das Das Dasanutas. Not even the servant of Krishna. Not even the servant of Krishna, but the servant of those people who were the servants of those living entities who were the servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Many times removed. In fact, the more removed, the better. The more we remove ourselves, the more we are in the back of the queue, the closer we are to the Lord. It is something like looking through a telescope. The more that there are lenses between your eye and what is being seen, the greater your perception of the ultimate object of your affection is. You understand? Because all of those predecessors that you look through, they magnify your vision. They also magnify the offering of your devotion. So when you offer something to the Lord, actually it goes to your guru. Your guru, he adds to the offering. It goes to his spiritual master. He adds to the offering. You may offer something small, but Krishna always receives a feast. Okay? Whatever you're offering, when it approaches the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it is always much more elaborate. By dint of going through parampara. Yeah. Now another consideration here is that the Lord, it says here that the Lord used to steal all kinds of eatables from the houses of neighboring friends. He used to steal, this consideration, steal all kinds of eatables. Factually speaking, nothing belongs to the living entity. So when we talk about Krishna stealing, we really are talking about pastimes. We really are talking about the act of loving exchange. Because there is nothing higher than the act of relationship. There's nothing greater than relationship. Everything is in sambandha. Everything is in relationship. So we go back here to the spiritual world, to the original community, only when we've learned to be in relationship properly. Jashushi Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai, Shushi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai, Shushi Gonitai Guru Parampara, Srila Prabhupada Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. So we only go back when we learn to act properly within the dynamics of relationship. Because that's what goes on. All that goes on in the spiritual world is loving exchange. That's it. It is an existential reality. So it goes on there, it goes on here. It goes on here in its imperfect form. It goes on there eternally in a form where the living entity is soaked and absorbed in love of Krishna. I was reading on the way here that the gopis, when they are separate from Krishna and they're looking for him, there's a pastime where, being unable to find him, they become so absorbed that they think that they are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then they start acting out his pastimes. Right? And the acharyas, they use this term, that they are filled with the presence of Krishna. They use this term, that the gopis are filled with the presence of Krishna. Which is a very extraordinary understanding. To miss someone so much that you become filled with the presence. And we hear a similar thing when Prabhupada is writing about when Krishna left Vrindavan. Prabhupada explains in Krishna book, he's still present with the residents of Vrindavan in his bhava expansion. because they're always thinking about him. And, you know, in the past times, it's explained that Mother Yashoda, she's become blind from crying because of how much she misses the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So these are very, very intense loving exchanges and intense loving dealings. And for the devotee, as we hear about these pastimes, as we hear about the pastimes, eventually one has the qualification to enter into the pastimes of the Lord. Meaning to return to the spiritual world. And it is interesting that by hearing about Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, we also become purified and qualified to appreciate the pastimes of Krishna properly. So there's a natural connection. We can take it even further. We can say that this Sankirtan Yajna is an extension of Lord Chaitanya's own pastimes. So engaging in the mission of spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world is to engage in the extended pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. And it is that engagement with all the adventure and all the romance and all the twists and turns that it involves. It is that mission that qualifies one to ultimately understand the loving exchanges of Radha and Krishna. So everything we do is interconnected. I was also reading this morning that it is explained that actually the special quality of being engaged in the Sankirtan mission and engaging in both hearing of Gaura Leela, hearing of Krishna Leela, is it allows one to develop one's eternal identity both in Goloka Vrindavan and actually in Navadvip, which is actually considered to be a special blessing that even Krishna's eternal associates do not receive. So it's an extremely, extremely special gift that is given by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. But the question is, how much does one take advantage of the gift? One is able to take advantage of something to the extent that they understand what it is. If you don't know what you have, there's no question of taking advantage of it. Right? It's not possible. If someone gives you something and you think it is very cheap, then the way that you will interact with it will be very different to if someone gives you something and you know that this is extremely valuable. So we're meant to go on understanding what Krishna consciousness actually is. And the symptom of your understanding is how much you take to it. People can say anything, but you will tell how much a person understands what they've been given by how deeply they enter into Krishna consciousness. So if someone is superficial in their devotion, it means you've not understood what you've been given by Srila Prabhupada. It's a symptom, it's a nimitta. Right? The fact that you're superficial means that you didn't really understand what he gave you. The fact that you've gone deep into it means that you have some understanding. And the fact that you completely gave yourself to Krishna consciousness means that you got it. Right? It means that you actually understood what was being given by Srila Prabhupada. Right? No one can fake it. No one can fake it. Because everything is shown by its lakshana, by its symptom. Right? Everything, in Vedic times, they wouldn't actually give students a full-on test. In other words, they wouldn't give them a piece of paper with lots of different questions like that. So what happened was they were so intelligent that they understood the science of nimitta. That means indicators. So what would happen is they could tell everything about a person's consciousness just by certain things that the person would say and certain things that the person would do. Right? That was it. Because actually, every single thing that you do, it gives away something about your mentality. Even though you don't mean to give it away, every single thing you do says something or indicates something about your mentality. For example, if you know the science, you can accurately understand how intelligent someone is by what they say. Right? In fact, not only can you tell how intelligent they are, you can specifically tell the nature of their intelligence by the speed of their speech, by what they say, by the content. All of these things are nimittas. Right? But it's a hidden science. Right? Everything about someone is being communicated at every moment by their behavior. And that's why Prabhupada says, for example, the speech, he talks about that, because the speech is directly related to the buddhi. Right? So the content of it, the speed of the speech, the type of words which are used, right? What's said in certain specific situations, all of these things indicate something. Right? Everything. Furthermore, how you react to certain situations, what you do, what you do not do, all of these things indicate something about the consciousness. It's just that it's a subtle science. And in the material world, people are gross. So therefore, when you have gross people, they can't perceive anything subtle. Right? But if one becomes purified by Krishna consciousness, these things are also directly perceived. Right? Everything can be directly perceived as you become more attuned to subtle levels of reality. Right? But whether you are attuned to it or not attuned to it, it still exists. Right? It still exists. And that's a whole other point. Let's look at this previous verse, 43. Thus rebuked by his mother, the Lord will go in anger to a room and break all the pots within it. Does that sound, that pastime of Lord Gauranga, does that sound like anyone else that you know who breaks some pots in anger? Yeah, yeah. So Damodar Leela also, that parallel is also there. But there's also this other point about anger. It is a misconception that saintly people do not become angry. Right? Actually, saintly people will become angry, but it's dependent upon why they're angry, if it's saintly or not. It's an interesting point. I was looking for it the other day. Prabhupada explains in the fourth canto, Bhagavatam, who here remembers the story of Narada Muni and the snake? Anyone remember that pastime? Okay, Prabhu remembers the pastime. So Prabhupada gives the example, he says, he gives the story of how there was a snake who used to bite people in the village. And then what happened was, Narada Muni preached to the snake became a devotee. So he asked instruction from Narada Muni, what's the instruction? Narada Muni said, now you're a devotee, you should no longer bite people. Okay? Do not bite people. So the snake, following the instruction of his guru, he stopped biting people. But then the villagers started to mistreat the snake. Right? But he did not bite because he saw, this is my instruction from my guru, so I should not bite. So then what happened was when Narada Muni came to visit him again, then he said, how are you? The snake said, I'm okay. He said, but now you told me not to bite the villagers and they've seen that I'm nonviolent. But now because they've seen I'm nonviolent, they're taking advantage of me. Right? And they're starting to throw stones at me. So what should I do? So Narada Muni said to him, he said, when people take advantage, he said, you should rear up your form and raise your hoods as if you're about to bite them. And that way it will scare them off. And then Prabhupada explains in the purport that you shouldn't actually be angry. But when people try to take advantage, do not forget to become angry. Yeah, it's interesting because it talks about the Lord will go in the anger in the room. Of course, this is different. This is Lord Chaitanya's Leela. But saintly people will sometimes become angry. Yeah? What actually happens is, when it talks about the three gates, lust, anger, and greed, you should not have any attachment to anger. That's the first point. That's a high level, but we should not. That's what we should come to. And second, you actually have no right to be angry unnecessarily. But in certain conditions, there is such a thing as healthy anger. Right? And that's directly explained by Prabhupada in that fourth canto of Bhagavatam. There is distinctly such a thing as healthy anger. The reason why these things are not brought out is because, and we should speak about it openly, the reason why these things are not brought out is because generally, if we have a society where many people are neophytes, what will the neophyte do with that understanding? What? They'll misuse it. Right? They will misuse it. That's the truth. So that you can't even explain that without explaining it within context, because otherwise people use it as an excuse to just be angry unnecessarily. But there's also another form of misuse where it's misunderstood. Yeah? Whereby when it's relevant, then it's like, oh, but you shouldn't be angry. No, you should be angry. Yeah? But anyway, the point being here that there are the dynamics, again, coming back to the first point, it's based upon what? What did we say at the beginning? Adhikar. Everything is based upon one's actual qualification. So there are two types of adhikar. There's the qualification of the individual, and there's the nature of the situation. This situation qualifies with this type of response. And this person is qualified to respond in this particular way. It's interesting. I remember hearing about this pastime where Prabhupada had to give a class. I'm just saying this because this microphone, sometimes you have to adjust it. So he called one of his disciples. He told him, take off your Brahmin thread. Right? He took off the disciple's Brahmin thread, used the Brahmin thread to tie the microphone to the stand. Now, if you were strictly Vedic, this is sacrilegious. Right? To take off a Brahmin thread and use it in that way, right, is actually sacrilegious. That actually may be me. So I'm going to go and get that. So hold that thought. Actually, could you bring my rucksack, please? I'm not sure, but we'll check. What time is class due to end? Why don't we do this? Just in case you have more questions, and just because normally I always finish such, no one can ask any questions. Do you have any questions at the moment based on what we said?